Last November, a devastating 58,000 gallons of oil spilled into San Francisco Bay after the Costco Busan crashed into the Bay Bridge. Well, over 1,000 seabirds were killed and many more were collected and treated by local response crews. Today, we'll bring you up to date on the efforts to clean up the mess and the long-term impacts it could have on the bay. This is Your Wetlands.
The response is actually still continuing a little bit today, just in terms of some efforts to still look for oil turning up on beaches and some cleanup still taking place. But from a wildlife perspective, mostly that part of the response has ended. But there was a significant number of species and birds impacted in November and through December. In total, about 3,000 birds were collected during the event.
Diana Humpel is a biologist with PRBO Conservation Science and co-project leader of their oil spill response program. I asked Diana what the residual impacts of an oil spill like this are on our bay ecosystems.
Not all the oil was cleaned up. I think the estimates right now are that half or 40%, somewhere around there, of the oil was either cleaned up or evaporated. And so it's not yet known what the ongoing impacts are going to be of any oil that might remain in the environment. But some people worry and anticipate that there might be such effects, particularly maybe less so directly on birds, the species that I'm involved in terms of oil spill response, but maybe more in terms of intertidal species, invertebrates, and the like. A big thing that's going to happen is the natural resource damage assessment process. And this is what the state is working on right now to really understand what the impacts are of this spill. And for birds specifically, the NRDA process will take all the data that's collected during the spill, data from all the birds that were collected, as well as surveys that were done, and other information. And so what they'll do in the end is they'll do some sophisticated modeling that will result in what the probable true impacts or true mortality of the spill was to each species. And out of this will actually come money, a settlement, that will go directly back into the populations or the species that were affected. So they are still gathering some of the data that's required to make the report.
Diana, some of the areas that have been cleaned up are accessible, but others are quite inaccessible. How are they handled?
I know some places are deemed inaccessible, and there's probably not much or any cleanup that can take place there, and that's just the way it is. I do know from a bird perspective that this is a big issue in terms of really understanding the impacts of the spill. And something that's important to note is that 3,000 birds or so were collected during the spill and brought in as part of the response. But this doesn't necessarily mean 3,000 birds were impacted by the spill. In fact, we know many more were. It depends on the spill what the proportion is of birds impacted to birds collected. It could be 50% of the birds impacted are collected, and it could be as low as 5 to 10% and has been found that low in some spills. It just depends. And so one of the big factors there is exactly what you said, the inaccessibility of certain areas. And another thing related to that is the more inaccessible an area is, the harder or longer it takes people to get to it, the less likelihood of when they get there, they are going to find the birds that did haul out there or are dead there because scavengers will remove them. And they remove the carcasses at a pretty high rate, so those are likely to be missed entirely. And that's an important part of the NRDA process, is figuring out how many birds probably never were detected that were impacted.
I'm also curious about the timing of the spill. Did it impact certain species more than others?
Definitely. The spill did not occur while any bird species were breeding. It occurred in a non-breeding time of year, but during a time when hundreds of thousands of birds are using the Central Coast area, many of which are using the bay itself, and this includes a lot of species that do not occur in the Bay Area during the breeding season but come here to winter, and it also includes a lot of birds, mostly the same species, that are moving through the area during peak migration period. It also does include some resident species that do breed in the area in the summer and are here year-round. And some of the top species that were impacted in really large numbers were surf scoters, western grebes, eared grebes, common murres, greater scot, Brandt's cormorant, and then there's many other species that we did see a fair amount of birds of those species coming in.
And to get some more insight into the aftermath of the oil spill, I spoke with Brad Olson, Environmental Programs Director for the East Bay Regional Parks District. He explains that over 31 miles of shoreline were affected by the spill, and cleanup has been ongoing.
The oil was still coming to shore at Albany Beach up until about a week and a half ago. The oil, as far as we can tell, it sunk below the surface and was somewhere in the water column or on the bottom of the bay. So with high tide events and storms, the oil continued to come ashore. The other area where you may not see the impacts is we have a lot of rocky shoreline, and the oil was cleaned off the surface of those rocks. However, down below, where the cleaning crews could not get to, there will still be some residual oil contamination. So from time to time, you may see an oily sheen in the water coming from those rocks during high tide events. And one of the projects that we're considering would be to remove some of those rocks and replace them with something that is less vulnerable to that kind of impact and also improves wildlife habitat. That would be one of the kind of projects that we're going to be seeking funding for.
How about the cost of the impact? Please give us an update on that part, too.
Well, we're currently doing an assessment of the amount of staff time that was required and the amount of materials that were required, whether it was rubber boots or absorbent booms. And we're putting together a claim, which would be submitted to the responsible party. And our preliminary estimates were somewhere in the range of about $500,000 for labor and materials. The more expensive cost in the long run will be things such as better preparedness for the next spill. And it's really only a matter of time. And we need to have greater capacity to respond as a first responder to the release of contaminants that threaten any one of our shoreline parks. And then the last component is that there is a lot of ecological damage, which may not be evident for quite some time, and we have identified a number of projects that we would like to see implemented, which could total, if they were all done, in excess of $20 million. So I don't know how much funds we may be able to obtain, and they have to relate to mitigating for the impacts of the oil spill. So I would anticipate that we'll get a significant amount of cash that could be put toward restoration projects.
Are there a few examples of projects you might be able to share with us?
Yes, they'd be things like restoring and expanding beaches, such as Albany Beach, creating new offshore habitat for birds, such as artificial islands, creating new habitat for eelgrass beds, which are important for both invertebrates and fish in the bay, and looking at some tidal marsh restoration projects in Richmond, and also some potential land acquisitions so that we can protect and manage some of the private lands that could be impacted by future oil spills.
And our thanks to Diana Humble and Brad Olson. You can visit the website of the San Francisco Bay Joint Venture to keep you up to date on what's happening and learn how you can get involved. The web address is sfbayjv.org. We also like to hear from you via email. Your questions and comments are most welcome. The email address is yourwetlands@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. I'm Jerry Kay.